Welcome to EJB Talks, Rutgers Blaustein School experts in policy, planning, and health, where we talk with our faculty and staff experts, as well as students, about how the fields of public policy, urban planning, public health, health administration, and public and urban informatics affect your lives. Welcome to EJB Talks. I'm Stuart Shapiro, the interim dean of the Blaustein School, and the purpose of this podcast is to highlight the work my colleagues, and particularly this season, our alumni in the fields of policy, planning, and health are doing to make the world, the country, and New Jersey a better place. Today, we welcome back to the podcast Brandon McCoy, Vice President for State Partnerships at the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities. Brandon graduated Blaustein with a master's degree in planning in 2013. Welcome back, Brandon.
Hey, Dean. Good to see you. It's great to call you Dean.
Yeah, I like it too. We last spoke here on the podcast in 2020. Since then, you left New Jersey Policy Perspective, where you were working then, and moved on to the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities. Can you talk a little bit about the decision to move and what CBPP does?
Yeah. CBPP is a national tax and budget think tank, much like NJPP in the state of New Jersey. Focuses a lot on federal tax and budget policy. Also other issues that are related to tax and budget policy, which you could argue is everything, but including things like, you know, food and nutrition, housing, immigration, healthcare, a whole bunch of things that are important to ensuring that every resident in the country has the resources that they need, you know, to succeed and to be healthy and to live, you know, full lives. And so a very similar mission to NJPP, of course. NJPP was and is part of the State Priorities Partnership, which is a national network of 40 states, 40 state groups, plus Washington, D.C. and Puerto Rico that do, you know, do what NJPP does with regards to tax and budget policy. And so my job now is, you know, as VP for State Partnerships at the Center, is to help provide support to that national network and help them think through how are they pursuing their work. And ensuring that they're going to be, you know, resilient, sustainable organizations that are effective, trusted, influential, and most importantly, around for the long haul, which when you're working in the nonprofit field and you have to sort of try to make long-term decisions with short-term grants, it's not always the easiest thing to do. But it's been a great experience so far. It was very difficult to leave NJPP for a whole host of reasons that we don't need to get into. But I'm very much so enjoying the work that I'm doing now and getting to help support more folks across the country that are doing important work.
Yeah, no, you're playing on a much much wider ball field right now. Obviously. Equally important, I don't want to slight the work in the state, but you're certainly playing with a much larger range of issues and people now. What are you focusing on? What are the issues that are sort of top on your radar?
Yeah, so there's lots going on, especially, you know, over the past 6 months. The Biden administration has been able to move a lot of its priorities and getting the Inflation Reduction Act through, you know, moving a lot of dollars through to states with regards to finalizing ARPA funds and the infrastructure bill and all those things. So a lot of it is helping state advocates and experts navigate what are those dollars and programs and resources that are available to them now from the federal government, and how should they best consider investing them into various programs and assets. And then also there's a lot to be done with regards to just general tax and budget policy. There's a lot of anti-tax forces out there that are always finding excuses to, you know, cut taxes for the wealthy and trying to, you know, reduce states' abilities to make investments that we consider really crucial and critical. So that's an evergreen issue and challenge. But in addition to that, lots of things in the states with regards to, you know, child tax credit and how that was a really impactful and effective policy during the pandemic that the Biden administration was able to get done. And then, you know, fortunately it goes away, but we see so much in the data about how much it reduced poverty for children across the country in really historic fashion. So now you have various states, New Jersey being one of them, that, you know, have implemented their own version of a child tax credit. And we're trying to expand that in other places as well. And then, of course, taking into account what it means for the right to reproductive health and the right to abortions to be going away in a lot of states. And that has a lot of effects in other policy areas and women's ability and people's ability and families' ability to be healthy in general. And also economic impacts, of course, on that as well, with regards to you're going to have increasing poverty in states that are getting rid of abortion access. And so there's a whole host of things that, you know, have all these sort of domino effects down the river. And it's never quiet. I'll just say that.
So the you mentioned the child tax credit, arguably the most successful anti-poverty initiative in a generation, at least. And then, as you noted, it's gone. What, you know, you're tuned into these things. What are the prospects of going back to a national child tax credit, given that we learned how well it worked during the pandemic?
Well, there's definitely a lot of folks who want to see it, you know, and
I'm one of them,
you know, so interest and enthusiasm is not the issue, as it can be sometimes on various policy ideas where you're trying to build awareness and whatnot. That is not our challenge here. I think it becomes, you know, to be honest with you, a largely political challenge. And of all the things that folks want to get done, where does this rank on that list of priorities that people have? I mean, just looking forward, you know, we do have in 2025 the sunsetting of the Trump tax cuts and the Trump tax bill, right? And so there is going to be a lot of attention paid to what are we doing to prepare for that moment and to prepare for those negotiations and what should be going into that new tax bill at that time. But that is 3 years away, and I'm sure folks are not too enthused to hear that, you know, that, you know, this might not be a thing until 3 years away. But I, you know, there's a whole host of organizations and stakeholders and advocates pushing to re-implement a child tax credit at the federal level. And just, you know, like most policy, it changes day to day based on sort of what's going on and where are the priorities and the focus of the nation. But it's got a lot of support, and I do feel like it will be a thing once again one day.
Well, here's hoping, because we've got two elections to go before we get to 2025. One other, I'll make a personal pitch. Can we use the lame duck session to get rid of the debt limit? Just forget these extensions and just get rid of it once and for all, so we don't have to go through this and we don't have hostage taking every time it expires.
I don't know. It looks like the hostage takers like to take hostages sometimes, you know?
We got to take the gun out of their hands, you know? It's a last opportunity to do it during the lame duck session this year, I think.
For sure.
So I want to turn a little bit here. Earlier this week, you gave a wonderful address at the Blaustein School, our Catlin lecture. And one of the points you made was the importance as an advocate of having the best analysis available in order to win your arguments. Why is that true?
Well, one is that you want to be a trusted voice. Right. And if you're going to be putting out information and analysis that is inaccurate or I would say even worse, just advancing lies, you know, or falsehoods, then it's hard to be trusted by folks that you would hope value that feature of analysis. You know, you would hope that most people want to know that they're engaging and receiving information that is based on some basic facts and has, you know, rigor to it to ensure that it is trying to get as close to the truth as possible. I do think from time to time, though, that you know, there are so many things that we are trying to analyze and understand better and sort of get closer to being able to incorporate into our thinking as policy analysts and advocates and just folks in the field. And sometimes I think that requires being willing to do some analysis that might be based on a lot of assumptions. You know, I remember when I did the analysis for how much tax revenue New Jersey would gain from legalizing cannabis, I had to make a lot of assumptions. I had to assume what was the size of the market? What would the tax rate be? How many people, maybe in Pennsylvania and New York would take a trip over the river? What would the cost of producing the crop be? And those are a lot of things that 6 years ago, we didn't have a lot of other examples to really pull off of and use to support that analysis. But that analysis really helped kickstart that conversation, more so in earnest to get the ball rolling around legalization of cannabis. Of course, so many other things did as well. But if I were super committed to like the most accurate analysis of all time, I would never have been able to produce that. So there is a need, I think, a little bit to have some bravery around putting out numbers that, maybe are more so in the ballpark, but as long as you explain your methodology, as long as you explain your sources and sort of how you came to the figure and other people can interrogate what you have put out, I think that's very important. Show your homework, show your math, right? But you definitely want to be known for knowing what you're doing, and reliable analysis is crucial.
Well, as a dean and as a professor in a public policy school, that's obviously music to my ears. That's what we our students to hear, and we want them to do good analysis, show your work, as you said, and let the chips fall where they may from there. That said, we live in an era where one doesn't have to go very far on the internet to see the value of expertise being questioned. Just, I think it was yesterday or the other day, I saw a doctor talk about how her emergency room was full, and that we need to be taking that seriously. And right away, huge attacks on, you don't know what you're talking about. And, she was like, well, wait, I'm right here. And if we can't trust that, what's the hope? What's the what do we need in order to sort of have analysis trusted, having people who show their work get trusted?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely worrisome when folks try to imply that 2 + 2 does not equal 4, right. And really question when people not only are doing maybe quantitative analysis, but even just sharing their own like straightforward experience of like, I was here, I saw this, and people question that, right? That is real.
Yeah. And it's hard because, and this, and the example you just gave sort of illustrated it. There aren't always clear right answers, but there are usually better answers and worse answers. And the fact that even the better answers have uncertainty around them and have questions you can ask gives people an opportunity to attack. And what we've seen, I think, is people use those opportunities to try and just rip holes in what would otherwise be considered good analysis.
Yes. So I do think, folks do need to understand that, well, one, there are folks who are questioning analysis because they have an agenda. Right. They're doing so purposely to reduce the impact of that analysis and say, oh, this is nonsense, don't pay attention to it, it's full of lies. So there is a political aspect to that I think people need to be aware of and take into account. And if you see somebody sort of dismissing something, like, understand that might be part of it. But then I think what you're pointing to is there are folks who just are really leaning into conspiracy theories, like that sort of conspiracy mindset. You can't trust anything. You can't trust officials. You can't trust institutions. And that's super worrisome insofar as, what does it mean for the country's ability to have a populace that can discern fact from fiction, and be able to make decisions that are going to be responsible to reality, so we can actually do the things that we need to do. And, there's a lot that could be said. When I was in high school and even middle school, there was a whole lot of time spent to how do you do, primary resources and secondary resources and, confirm where you got your information from. And I'm sort of at a loss for, did everybody else have that teaching in school? And how do people go about confirming their resources these days? Because it seems like there's a lack of that. So I'm a little worried about whether or not that, took as much as it should. But even so, I think at the end of the day, accurate analysis matters. And ultimately, I feel like in sort of what I've seen based on some social media research and statistics, it seems to be more or less that the squeaky wheel is getting the grease here, and that these are sort of, you know, very loud minority parties. You know, and it's just like, you know, a handful of folks who are really off the deep end and believing some wacky stuff, but they're taking full advantage of whatever bullhorn is available to them to spread as much of their viewpoint as possible. And, you know, the silent majority, as it may be, maybe needs to be a little bit less silent and do a better job of speaking up about what type of country they want, what type of future they feel they deserve, and what it is that they believe in.
Yeah, one of the messages that those loud voices, Trump loud, is do your own research. And, you know, I think, and you can probably back me up on this. No, don't do your own research. Trust the people that have done their own research and are trained to have done it. And that there is expertise does mean something, and good analysis means something. Yeah. Let me ask you a question that you got asked on Tuesday. What advice do you have, sort of given this environment, given your experiences, what advice do you have for new students, undergraduates or graduates in public policy, urban planning, or public health?
One is make sure that you improve your writing skills, right? Being a good writer not only is important in and of itself, but also translates to a number of other areas when it comes to expressing yourself and being able to put forth your perspective and your vision. And as a policy advocate or a planner or anybody that's working sort of in the public sphere and in the public interest, you have to do that. Again, there's the squeaky wheel gets the grease, right? And so you need to be able to put your perspective forward and have it resonate with people. And, you know, the best writing and the best speeches are, you know, there's a bit of a brevity and an impact to them, and that they don't overstay their welcome, but they make their point in really, you know, shrewd fashion. And so being a good writer is important. And then also something that I've come to appreciate more and more is, you know, the more that you understand the history of what it is you're working on or the space that you're working in, I think the more you're able to prepare yourself for what may be coming or see patterns that took place previously, you know, taking place again. And, you know, for me, the more that I have been able to learn about various history, whether it's the, you know, New Jersey political history or, you know, the history of a particular issue, like, yeah, I used to do a lot of work on minimum wage and understanding the history of that policy issue. I was just better situated to be an effective advocate for those things and to maneuver in that space. And that's just, you know, I think folks will take you a little bit more seriously, especially when you're younger, if you show that you care enough about what you're working on to think about the things that have come before you, and not just responding to what has been put in front of you.
Yeah, I do think that's an excellent point. I hadn't thought too much about that recently, but understanding history is really important. And some of that is, it comes with experience and wisdom and such, but some of it you can learn. And, you know, just to go back to the debt limit, one of the reasons I was so strident about that a few minutes ago is the number of times I've lived through debt limit crises in the past two decades is far more than it should be. And it's something I'd like to see gotten rid of. Any final words of wisdom, Brandon?
I mean, I think, you know, generally speaking, and I think I try to say this at my talk the other day, but for, you know, for current students, you know, do not take your time in school for granted. It passes very, very quickly. And one of the best things you can do when you're in school is really appreciate the folks that you are with and the folks that you're learning with. And there's so many people that when I was at Blaustein for, you know, my 2 years, actually 2.5 years, you know, I still work with those folks today. I know I shared before, Katie Brennan's the first person I met my first day of school. And she came back to my class that I'm teaching. She came back last night to help my students learn about, you know, some housing policy stuff. And so, you know, ultimately, a lot of being successful when it comes to this space is having relationships with folks and developing trust. And that's how you build the community that's going to help you be successful and help you assist others in their success as well. So build that community around you and definitely know that there is no self-made person. There is no individual success. You need it takes a village. I'll put it that way.
Great. That's a great note to end on. Thanks so much for coming back on the podcast, Brandon.
Thanks.
And a big thank you as well to our production team, Amy Cobb and Karen Olson. We'll see you next week with another talk from another expert at the Blaustein School. Till then, stay safe.